All right, well, good evening, everyone. I'm so glad you're here. My name's Tuere Salah, for those of you that don't know. I am happy to see you. We are happy that you're here. Seattle Insight is really doing some big things here. It feels very special, feels very connected to this growing Dhamma community. And I'm so happy that we are a part of it and have remained a part of it for many, many years. And so, and now that we have this space, I envision all kinds of things beginning to happen. So I'm happy you're here. Tonight is the start of a new topic in the Paramis, this series that we've been doing. And I'm gonna talk about patience. It's awkward to talk about the Paramis, I think, because they're regular words. I mean, they're just regular English words that we use all the time. And yet, what we're actually pointing to in practice is something significantly different. And if we only review the idea of these paramis from the position of what the words mean in English, then we miss some of the main qualities that the paramis are pointing to. So in order, from my perspective, in order for us to see the deeper rooted connection of what the paramis are speaking to, then it almost requires or demands that we actually practice and cultivate them, each one of them, in series together, by themselves. So the way we're spending an entire year talking about each one month after month after month to practice with them is a way to help begin to see into the nature of these qualities. And patience is one of the foremost of these words, because we use patience so randomly in our ordinary English speaking. And there's a kind of a, almost like we're sucking it up and taking on something that we really don't want to, or we're making ourselves be nicer than we really want to be. There's a kind of a forced energy to it. And that is not patience at all. And in Dhamma, it's quite different. And so I'm hoping this opening talk into patience will begin to set some kind of begin to set a view in you towards questioning this underlying thoughts that you might have about patience. I want to start with this little, the Dhammapada is a book of little kind of snippets or little quirks that the Buddha has said over his teaching life. And there'd be these little things that he has said, and it's all kind of encapsulated in the Dhammapada, like pithy sayings. And one of the sayings he said is that enduring patience is the highest austerity. So when I first read this, enduring patience is the highest austerity, of course, I thought of austere, you know, when you think of austere financial practices, it's like, you know, tighten your belt, suck it up. It's like very harsh and painful. And most of us that go through those, you know, austere kind of economic times, it's almost like painfully forced upon us about tightening our belts. So if you see that word, that enduring patience is the highest austerity, then your thoughts can go to aesthetics, and then that austerity aesthetics, the way they practice with nothing. And it can seem like patience is the highest of nothing. It's the nothingness of nothing. You force yourself not to accept anything, nothing. But I want to read you the definition here of austerity, because it's more to it than just the financial, or the way that we look at it in economies and things like that. It is the main dictionary definition of it is the quality or state of being austere is like a stern and serious quality. It's a plain and simple quality. All right, so think about this. Don't put it to the money situation, because in the money situation, plain and simple, you know, that can be a little difficult, or serious and stern, that can come across difficult. But just think of it in this terms of one of the highest enduring qualities we have is plain and simple. And it is serious what we're cultivating here in patience. It's not some wimpy kind of holding and bearing down and let me suck it up until everything changes. It's not that. It's a serious cultivation of a quality of patience. And it's simple and it's plain. And so I want to frame how I see these paramis so that you can begin to see where I'm pointing as we go through this talk. So I see the paramis as divided in half. The first half is setting your mind right, setting the heart. You're learning to let your heart lead you rather than your mind. It doesn't mean that we're getting all marshmallowy and we're not going to really do anything anymore. We're kind of laying around doing nothing. That's the image that people kind of have of the heart. But in truth, someone with a strong heart, they are fierce. They can take on anything. They can be with anything. They can remain steady against all kinds of winds. And so we're cultivating a stout heart that's strong and open-hearted. So it is capable of not only seeing what's good, it can have this sense of well-being even when it's not well-being. So it's a much stronger capacity to hold more things. That's what we're cultivating in the first half. That's what we've been cultivating the first half of the year, with generosity and our sila, ethical conduct, and our renunciation, this having this bit of restraint, and the idea of cultivating wisdom, understanding the truth of the way things are, the coming and going. And so, from patience on, we are cultivating action. So it starts with patience. And I missed in here last month's talk on virya, or energy, because energy is like the wind that moves us into the next five actions. So we cultivate this heart that's open and that's willing to face life on life's terms, however that is, difficult or not. Doesn't mean everything's got to be easy, and it doesn't mean we have to pretend like the difficult is easy. That's not what it means. It means difficult is difficult, and we will take on difficult. Hard is hard. Sad is sad. Disappointment is disappointment, but we are going to practice with that too. We're not just looking for some serene samadhi floating along in life. We're looking for an ability to be with disappointment in a way that's not going to cause everybody around us harm. And so this cultivating the first half of the paramis is getting our heart set. And then virya comes in as the fifth parami and sets in motion a series of five kinds of actions. So the next 5 months are going to be about ways that we act in the world when our heart is set and we are being led by this much more stouter, open-hearted way. And the first thing we begin to act in is with patience. And so that this patience does not see the world the way our ordinary mind does. Patience accepts the world within the container of the world the way it is. So Suchito, he says that patience, let's see if I can find his quote here. He calls it a conscious choice or acceptance without expectation. So I want to talk about three qualities that exist in patience. One quality is it's conscious. You're choosing something. Can you see the action in that? Before you're cultivating a kind of heart that can be with life, but when you get to patience, you're actually making a conscious choice to be with something and be with it as it is, even if it's difficult. So you're allowing the present moment to be as it is. There's a quality of it that is in and of itself open to whatever's happening. And you're not just open to whatever's happening in this kind of doormat way, which is what our ordinary mind thinks. If I got to open to pain or suffering or difficulty, then I'm just going to be a doormat. I'm just going to be stepped on. But that's not really what you're opening to. You're opening to being willing to practice with whatever the difficulty is in front of you. And you need the patience to be able to make that choice. The four beginning paramis, you're opening this heart, and then this virya gives you the energy to be able to choose to be with the difficulty, whatever that is. And in that choosing to be with the difficulty, there's a calmness, a stillness that difficulty is wrapped in. It's not a force against the winds of our lives pushing us to be a certain way. It is more of a choosing to be with something. And choosing to be with something that's difficult, you've already opened the door for the possibility of seeing your way through it. If we resist it and don't choose to be with it, now we're going to be tussling with it and fighting with it. You know why? Because it is in existence. And so either we choose to allow it to see it, or we fight it and we resist and fight that which is. So this, when we are sort of being with something, choosing to be with something, then we are choosing to see both the difficulty, and trust that a resolution or appropriate response will arise. So there was a famous Zen teacher, I can't remember what his name is, but my friend Rachel Lewis always shares this little story. She says that right before he died, he was doing a question and answer, and somebody asked him, you know, he's been practicing for years and he has this deep wisdom. He's like an enlightened being as far as they can see. So they're in this quality. They say to him, out of all your years of experience and learning, what would you say the purpose of practice is? What's the purpose of all this Dhamma meditating and all this work we do? And so he thought for a few minutes, and then he goes to learn an appropriate response. That's what we're doing. We're learning how to respond appropriately to life's situations. Not to fix something, not to figure it out, but to learn what is appropriate in this moment. How do I be with this moment? How do I be with the next moment? And so patience, you can see, is one of the qualities we need to have. We need to choose to be with the experience as it is and allow ourselves time enough to understand what is an appropriate response. How do I respond to this? There's a lot going on in the world today, and much of it generates a reactivity within us, just automatic, without even thinking. It's just reactivity after reactivity after reactivity. I personally am beginning to think it has to do with being in a 24-hour news cycle. Because when you're in a 24-hour news cycle, I mean, it used to be when I was a kid, thankfully, the news only came on for like an hour, and that was it. And anything that needed to be said was said within that hour. But the rest of the world, the rest of your life, you lived based on whatever was coming and going in your real world. Now we live in this 24-hour news cycle. And every single announcer, every news person knows that in order to engage your attention, it has to be dramatic, quick, right now, impulsive, reactive. And so we're trapped in this reactivity, this world that has no patience. It is pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And so when you're practicing in the Dhamma, you're making a conscious choice to wait, to still yourself, to quiet yourself, to not just respond reactively. That's why I picked the pitcher of water. That's why I picked the water drops as our symbol. You gotta, when you're at home, you gotta fill the sink up with water and then let it get all settled and then stare at it and then drop something. And you'll see these ripples that happen, right? And you can feel this desire to want to get it back smooth again. You're just looking at it and you can already see it. But if you watch yourself steady, just watch the water, you will see that those ripples will fizzle out. They fizzle out. Because every single causation, every condition that arises will cease. This is what the Buddha's main point was. It will cease. Not it may cease, it will cease. And most of it, most of our impatience is we can't wait for it to cease. We don't believe it's going to cease, so we have to make it cease, or we want to make sure we control the ceasing. Whatever happens, I need to control how that happens. Because if I control how it happens, now I'll be okay. Instead, we are learning to act in a way that actually is willing to wait, is choosing to make to wait. So now there's another quality that patience gives us. If you start with this willingness to wait, to be still. Another way to think of it is to pause. One of the best practices I learned how to settle my reactivity was with Inside Dialogue. Do any of you know about Inside Dialogue? Have you heard, some of you? So Inside Dialogue is not what you would think of as teaching patience. Inside Dialogue is a practice of meditating with the voice of another. So two people are meditating together. And so you practice meditating together and you follow these six guidelines. And in the course of following those six guidelines, you are going to learn kind of like how to help each other get settler and settler and settler and settler. And if you practice it in retreat or in a day long or something like that, you actually can get into some deep stillness with another person, you and another person talking. So when I first learned this, this was like 2007, I first learned this. Let me tell you the six guidelines. So the six guidelines are pause, and then relax, or you could call it, I always called it soften, be still. So pause, relax, open, attune to emergence, listen deeply and speak the truth. This is the six guidelines that you practice, and you learn how to practice with each one of those six, and then you can begin to practice together with another person. So when I very first started, when I very first went to a day long, I think it was a weekend, Greg Kramer came to Seattle Insight and offered a non-residential, and I went. And I was so still talking to other people. And then afterwards, you know, everybody starts saying, this is great. We need to get some groups together and let's practice this all the time. And just the thought of being in another group was like way too much for me. I was like, no, 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 no. Because at the time I was a trial lawyer and I was working 80 hours a week. No more groups. So I go home and I remember feeling this kind of disappointment because I loved that practice and I wanted to do it, but I could not get in another group. I just could not do it. So I was laying in the bed and I was thinking to myself, how could I do this practice, right? It's, you have to do it with the voice of another. So how am I going to do this practice and make it work? And I thought, I'll make my body the voice of another. So I'm going to talk to my body and I'm going to listen to what the body says and talk. I had no idea that I was going to create in myself this such a beautiful practice. But I would pause and I would soften and relax and I would just open to whatever I thought the body was trying to say. And attuned to emergence is opening, is like feeling the internal and the external and learning to balance yourself between what's happening around you and what's happening inside. And this attuning to emergence is being in the present moment right now. So you're attuning to what's right here. And I would listen deeply and I would only speak what was true. And I started practicing this late at night to help myself go to sleep and to help me let go of this restless mind that was a trial attorney. So I would be just stuck in this mind loop all night. And so I would begin to listen to what the body's trying to say. And I begin to realize that if I paused in any moment, this quiet would come rushing in, this sati would come in, mindfulness would come in. I didn't have to go make myself be mindful. All I had to do was learn to just pause, just stop for one moment. Just, I could give myself what I called 1 minute of enlightenment. Just be still for 1 minute. And all of a sudden, I could see how things pass, which is the second quality of patience. When we begin to make this choice to actually be still with the moment, to pause, what we begin to see is how dukkha arises, how difficult dukkha being suffering, how suffering difficulties arise, and how it passes. You can begin to see what's actually going on. But if you don't directly interrupt the flow of what's happening, you end up stuck in this kind of reactive world. We're in the reactive world that is the world that we deal with all the time. So we're being taught to be reactive. We're being taught to be impulsive. You can't think anymore about almost anything. You need to make a decision right now. You have to buy it right now. You have to get it right now. And everything is so reactive that what we are teaching our minds is how to be impulsive, quick thinking, get it done right now. And what I had learned, I mean, it came as a trial lawyer. For those of you who don't know, there's all this pressure to answer this motion right now, answer, take care of this problem right now, this witness right now. And it was this constant right now, right now, right now. So as soon as you go into work, you're running, doing this, doing that, doing this, doing that. It's probably the same in just about every job, but it seemed crazy when I think back on it, like how in God's name did I live like that? But everything was on the emergency edge. Everything was an emergency. Everything had to be done right now. And almost now with news, everything is a breaking news. It used to be breaking news was actually a breaking news, but no. Now everything, every 10 minutes, breaking news, something new. And that we are training our minds to live out life this way. And Dhamma is going against the grain. It's going against the grain of that. And we are intentionally choosing to train our minds to pause, to stop, to take a moment, to see where this difficulty is coming from. So you have some moment of difficulty. We impulsively just want to get rid of it. But it doesn't work if we keep impulsively getting rid of our difficulties, because we live in a system, this human system, that's bound by what the Buddha called vicissitudes. And the vicissitudes are the four pairs. The pain and pleasure, gain and loss, praise and blame, and fame and ill repute. So when you think of fame and ill repute, you don't have to necessarily mean, are you a famous person? Well, that one doesn't count for me. It's like fame in your little community, your family, your friends. Everybody likes you, and now everybody's mad at you. It's like that. So we always want to be on the pleasure side, on the gain side, on the fame side and the praise side. Want everybody to like us. Everything is going good. Everything is smooth running. And then when any of the negative side happens, we immediately think that as something wrong. And we impulsively try to get it back right again, get back on the pleasure side, gain side, get back on the praise and the fame. Everything's good. But that is not the nature of life. meaning that the nature of life, if you're willing to have pleasure, you can bank on some pain. It's just, it's coming with the pleasure. It's a package deal. So if you volunteer, who wants pleasure? I do. Okay, well then you might as well raise your hand. Who wants pain? I do. Because they come together. And this idea that we can impulsively put ourselves only on the upside, we are tilting ourselves and we're walking around in this tilted, non-realistic way. So if you want the gain, then you're going to have some loss. You have to prepare for that. You have to know, recognize it, accept it, see that the loss is inherently part of gain. They come together. And it doesn't mean that once you have the loss, now it's permanent, I'm on the negative side, this is all we get. No. If you're willing to take the loss, then you can best believe there will be a gain that will come. So there's this patience is learning to see that these vicissitudes, or they're also called worldly winds, that cause all this reactivity, that you can begin to hold that pleasure and pain, the gain and loss, the blame and the praise, and you can hold the fame and the ill repute. You can hold that. You can be with that. It's not that the pain or the difficult isn't hard. It's just that you can be with it. You can bear it just like you can bear the upside. This is what you're learning with patience, because you're recognizing that this is the nature of the human condition that we live in. So the last quality here is that patience is actually setting us up for the next qualities. The next qualities that are going to come, this kind of the level of kindness that we're looking at, the level of truthfulness and equanimity, and this determination, this resolve, steady ourselves. Patience is the foundation that those stand on, our capacity to know who we are, know how we're going to move. I don't care how the world is. I don't care what's going on. We know who we are. We know how we're going to move. And it shields, or it chops off all of that panic and fear, because there's a steadiness that begins to happen with your trust in the Dhamma. And the reason why you begin to trust the Dhamma through patience is because if you steady yourself in the midst of difficulty, you will see that it rises and it passes away. Mostly, it rises, we panic, and we try to fix it and get it away, and then we don't see that it will pass regardless. We think our efforts is what makes it go away, and it does, most times. But because we can make things go away, make things get back on the upside, we can chop off all that stuff we don't like pretty quick. If you have enough money, you can fix things really quick. If you don't have enough money, then you can, you know, kind of like shove out in the world and blame the whole world for what's happening. But we have this way of moving ourselves into this kind of pleasure-seeking world all the time. And we don't know, we can't see that whatever arises will pass. I mean, whatever rises will pass. Whatever good rises will eventually fade, and we'll lose all that luster and all that happy, 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 happy. Of course, you know that if you get married, you're like, everything is great, it's wonderful. That's why when I have my mudita, I only have the mudita for people when they first ask the person to marry them, because then they're all happy and everything is great. I never think of long-lasting marriages. I've had too many and they didn't work. So it's like, not even thinking about that. But when it first started, it was great. I was so happy. You know, you could stay up all night and I could still get up in the morning and go to work and be happy, happy, happy all day. And so that happiness is a part of life, but so is the difficulty and so is divorce. It's a very natural, normal part of life. And yet, when we're faced with a divorce, then we think something terrible has happened. And it's not true. It's just the nature of what comes together. Not everybody that gets married has a divorce, but the fact that you have a divorce when you get married or you separate from a partner, that separation is a normal part of, it's a possibility the minute you get all sparkly-eyed with someone. It's like the possibility exists right then that something's gonna go wrong. And it's learning to be willing to say, if I'm going to take the risk of all this joy, then I'm going to be willing to hold the pain if it doesn't work. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? So this quality of patience is a choice that we're beginning to make. It's an action. It's a comic implication that I can hold what will come when it comes. Whatever it is, I can hold that, and we're learning to do it. I want to share this sutta for you that is, it's called the Sasutta Sutta. Sasutta, Sasusa, that's it, Sasusa Sutta. So I want to share this sutta. Because this is what I also think is what the Buddha was trying to say. So he said that endowed with these six qualities, a person is incapable of alighting on the lawfulness, the rightness of skill, skillful mental qualities, even when listening to the Dhamma. So what's the six? He said, I'll say the Dhamma declared by the Buddha is being taught. He does not listen well, or they do not listen well. They do not give ear. They do not apply the mind to the gnosis of it, or the gnosis of it being I'm just going to call it gnosis for a minute and explain that in just a minute. And they don't grab hold of what is worthless. They grab hold to what is worthless and reject what is worthwhile. And they are not endowed with the patience to conform to the teachings. Right. So basically, you hear something, and you're not really listening to it. You don't really care what's going on, and it's like you're not really connected to what is it. You kind of just look for what's going to make this work for me, the way I really want it to work. I'm not really trying to do nothing else. So this is a person that's endowed with these six qualities. This is how they perceive Dhamma. When the teachings of the Buddha, in the teachings are declared by the Buddha, it's being taught. They listen well. They give ear. They apply their mind to the gnosis, reject what is worthless, grab hold to what is worthwhile, and is endowed with the patience to conform with the teachings. Now, I looked up this word gnosis because I do not use that word. But I looked it up because I wanted to see what is this? They're translating it as gnosis, but what it means is it's esoteric knowledge of spiritual truth held by ancient Gnostics to be essential to salvation. So let me see if I can tell you how I read that sutta, what he's saying. So what he's saying is that if you begin to listen to the Dhamma and cultivate it from a place in your own mind, in something that's beyond your ordinary way of looking, so something you're listening and reflecting and contemplating from this much more subtle realm of understanding, not your ordinary understanding, how does it work for me, but this subtle realm of understanding, then you can begin to hear something that will allow you to take the teachings that you hear and apply it in your life. It seems to me that he's not pointing to, he doesn't say here, you learned something, right? It doesn't say you studied hard and you learned the teachings and then you apply it in your life. He doesn't say that. He's like, you're listening and you're giving ear in this subtle spiritual way to the possibility of something. And then you have the patience to apply it in your life. That's what you're doing. So when you're in your life, you have a gift that happens all the time, constantly even. You get upset, irritated, don't like, aversive, impatient, disappointed, mad. I could go on. We have a whole slew of negative emotions that happen. We feel it all day long. All day long, day after day after day. I don't care how happy we get, it will not be long before something will irritate us. I don't care how much you beg to get that job and you finally got it, there will be somebody working at that company that you cannot stand, and they are probably on your team. There's no way to get around it, because what the Buddha pointed to is dukkha is the first ennobling truth. What he was saying is the very first thing that starts you towards the path of awakening, being enlightened, is you have to be willing to notice there's some dukkha. And once you notice that dukkha, the second ennobling truth is there's a cause to it. Third one is it will cease. So that first ennobling truth to get from the moment you realize there's some difficulty to the cessation, you have to have the patience to hold it, to be with it, to look at it, investigate it in this spiritual kind of mind, the subtle mind that wants to understand what's happening, not fix the problem, that wants to understand what has happened here. Something is here. That mind, that's all that's needed. That mind and the patience to be still, and you will begin to see the truth of the way existence is. It's an act, this choice that we make to be patient with difficulty, because it is not common. What's common is as soon as we feel something difficult, we push against it and try to make it right, get back on the upside. But this practice is about learning how to be still with the difficult, until we can see the nature of it and come up with an appropriate response. I'm going to leave you with this last quote here. This poem is one of my favorite poems. I love it, love it, love it. It's called The Patience of Ordinary Things. This is what I think the Buddha's pointing to. You can see things in a very different way. Ordinary things in a very different way. It's by Pat Snyder, and Pat says, "It's a kind of love, is it not? How the cup holds the tea? How the chairs stand sturdy and four squared? How the floor receives the bottom of shoes or toes? And how soles of feet know where they're supposed to be? I've been thinking about the patience of ordinary things. How clothes wait respectfully in closets. And soap dries quietly in the dish. And towels drink the wet from the skin of the back. And the lovely repetition of stairs. And what is more generous than a window?" Isn't that beautiful? So this is the kind of seeing you're cultivating. We have all these ordinary things that are happening. And if we learn to just pause a moment and see in this subtle way, we can see the truth of things. We can see the nature of things. And we can learn over time to cultivate a willingness to move into a choice of the appropriate response and out of this worldly, reactive kind of pressure cooker way that the world is expecting us to be. So think about it. If all of us in the world, if we all kind of just settled this human capacity to be still and make a choice, we would see just how driven we are by machines. We are not driven by human nature. We're being driven by machines. And machines don't have a sense of patience. They can tell you what patience is. But machines don't have that. We have to actually instill it back in the world. We have to instill it in our lives. So that's what we're going to work on this month, is how to begin to see this conscious choice to be still for a moment, to wait, to let the tensions and the difficulties and the dukkha or the suffering that we feel, let it be a bell that says, wait a minute, just a minute, just a minute, something's happening here, instead of just quickly wanting to get it fixed, make it right. So let's sit for a moment here and we'll see what arises. Okay, so let's see if there's any comments. If you're in the hall, we have a handheld wireless mic, so we don't have to come up to the dreaded seat anymore. But you do have to wait for the mic to come to you, because without a mic, nobody online can hear what you're saying. So let's see if there's any comments.
I'd say go ahead and stand up when you speak so that people online can.
Oh my God.
Oh, I don't know if people are going to be able to do that, Cheryl.
That's a lot to ask.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I think we don't have to see faces.
Can I do what I want?
Yes.
I don't think people would object if I was
okay, sitting. I think you could sit down.
Hi, everybody. Hi. Towards the end of your Dhamma talk, you were talking about how we're ruled by machines. And that was an introduction of a new term that you hadn't used.
Yeah,
and you're I believe you're talking about the machine of the mind that is basically very automatic and based on causes and conditions.
No, I'm talking about physical machines like this.
Maybe you could develop that a little bit more then, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, I don't know this to be true. I've just been thinking that machines, like my cell phone, does not have a time sensitivity to it. And so I realize, I'm probably the only one that does this, so you don't have to admit if you do, but I can scroll, if I hit one of those little short videos, I can be scrolling through video after video after video after video after video. And what's weird is it feels like I'm looking at something in the present moment, because it's a little clip right here, right now. So I feel like I'm right here, right now in the present moment. And yet, I could sit there for 2 hours and I don't even know that 2 hours has passed, because every little clip feels like present moment, present moment, present moment, present moment. And you don't know this greater sense of passing time. So I think our minds need we're learning to be in the present moment here now, right now, right now, right now, right now. But when you're sitting in meditation, that right now, right now, right now, right now, right now happens, but it feels like as time goes, you get steadier and steadier and steadier and steadier. The same thing happens when you're scrolling, but you are losing time, not aware of time. And you can lose an unbelievable amount of time. And I just begin to notice how my watch, my cell phone, even emails that come to me, because I'm a chair of the Guiding Teachers Council at Spirit Rock, and you know, I teach a lot and I have all these retreats, and everybody that sends me an email, they want a response right now. I mean, it used to be if you got an email, you could get around to it in a few days. But now, if I send you an email, it's like right now, like we're talking to each other. And so all these emails come in this constant, you know, impulsiveness. But it's because of the accessibility that I think machines give us. And so we're kind of like giving our lives over to the machine. It's not that I think we shouldn't have the machines, because I think living in a world of Zoom is a beautiful thing. But it is this recognition that we decide how impulsive we are, not the gadgets that we use cannot decide how impulsive
we
are.
That's the pause part.
That's it. We decide how impulsive we can get.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Anybody on Zoom?
We're being patient. We're pausing and waiting for an appropriate response.
Who is that? Hooray.
Ellen,
go ahead.
Eileen. Hi.
Aloha.
Oh, you're on mute still, I think.
Really?
Oh, no. You're not on mute, but I can't hear you.
There's a reason for that.
Okay.
Can you unmute it? You're in?
Okay, there. We can hear you now.
Okay, awesome. Aloha. Great to hear your talk. And I don't know if there's an answer to this question, but the truth is, when I feel some discomfort, I don't like it.
And yes, that's very true.
It sounds nice to be, you know, have a big heart and be with whatever's happening in the present moment, even if it's difficult, but, you know, there's a lot of aversion, so I don't know. I guess I have to deal with the aversion first, or?
No.
Sure. Thank you.
So, Elaine, you don't have to deal with the aversion first. And you don't have to somehow or another convince yourself to like the things you don't like. You have to create a pause so that you can learn that the things that you don't like will pass away, whether you do anything or not. You don't have to do something to make it go away. The patience is this willingness to bear it like a wagon. That Helen Luke's famous quote is that we bear suffering the way a wagon bears a heavy load, right? So a wagon just carries the heavy load. It doesn't make it less heavy. It's still heavy. So yes, it's still painful, but we have a mind that thinks when something is difficult, it will remain this way forever unless I do something to fix it. We actually have to train ourselves to learn that discomfort only lasts a very short window of time. We don't think so. We don't believe that. I mean, pain lasts forever. But really, what's lasting forever when I have my arthritic pain show up is my aversion to it being there. This constant aversion is what's lasting forever. But I've learned to soften with that pain in my ankle because I understand why it's here and it's not going away. It's not like I can somehow or another magically make arthritis go away. When it's here, it's kind of here. That's it. There's no other choice. So I've learned to soften with the pain itself so that I'm not freaked out about it. It's still painful. But that softening around it enables me to see the periods where the pain is not there. If I don't soften around the pain, my aversion will suck up all the time, even the times when the pain is not there. It will just suck it up and I will never see that. And so you're learning to soften and be patient, not because you shouldn't not like the pain or you don't like the discomfort, but you have to teach yourself to begin to see that discomfort is not permanent. And the only way to do that is have the choice to bear it. That's why I gave myself a 1 minute awakening practice. So that means I only have to bear it 1 minute. That's it. 1 minute, and then I'm doing whatever. Ice cream city. Doesn't matter. Whatever. Whatever I need, that's what we're working with. But for 1 minute, I have to soften and I have to allow it to be in the world as if my body is trying to tell me, I have something that hurts here. I need a moment. And don't just keep walking all over the place. Just sit down for a moment and let me catch my breath. And so I would listen. That learning to listen, that learning to pause is what helps us realize that difficulty or this dukkha, the suffering, doesn't last all the time. But you won't see that unless you give yourself a pause to allow yourself to see that it naturally will pass away.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Monica?
Hi, thank you for the talk, Tuere.
Yes, you're so welcome.
My question is sort of on the similar or adjacent topic. I have, like most people, don't like suffering. So I have come up with a different and not exactly the best way to approach it, instead of kind of fighting against something that I want to change, against, do it, and instead of like sitting with it, which I am aware would be the healthiest and best way to do this, I just avoid action, avoid thinking about it. I procrastinate, and the thought that this too shall pass is actually not helpful to the procrastination,
It doesn't help.
because some things you have to deal with, and it feels like this sitting with the suffering is this knife's edge between the procrastination and the taking inappropriate action. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts of making this knife edge like wider and more possible. And I really love, to that point, your 1 minute idea. I'll try
That's
that.
right. That's this is so what you're talking about is we all have a window of tolerance. And the more you have been overwhelmed by difficulty, the smaller your window is. And so my window of tolerance was pretty short. My fuse of how much I could take before I would freak out was very short. So in my life, many of you know, if I got upset about something, I would freak out in a moment's notice. I can be laughing and joking and playing, and if I saw something I didn't like, or if something happened I didn't like, I'd change like night and day. And so the fuse was so short that I didn't think I could ever learn this capacity to be still with anything, and especially people that come from trauma. It's so reactive, it's so quick, it doesn't, you don't even have a moment's time to shift. So for me, a minute was a big deal. And I just wanted to give myself, I guess, a little win. That was like, I'm gonna do all this practice, and I'm practicing, 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 and I'm still yelling at everybody, snapping at everybody, and everybody's still getting irritated. I might lose my job. All of that energy was still happening. So I had to give myself a little win, and my win was 1 minute. And I thought at the time, pausing for 1 minute was stupid. No big deal. It was my only win. I did not think I would ever get to a place where I wouldn't be reactive. I just thought, 1 minute, I get to call it a win. I get to say I did something. And Shanti Deva has a quote that says, don't look down on small drops of water, small things, little things. Because a small drop of water over time will fill an ocean. And that is what we have to begin to trust. And we have to be with each other and help each other trust that your little 1 minute of pause will grow. It doesn't, you don't have to make it grow. It will grow if you just begin to insert a pause. That's it. One pause, 1 minute, 30 seconds. Give yourself the 30 second. If 1 minute's too long, start with 30 seconds. Okay, 30 seconds. And you just sit there for 30 seconds. But you have to let yourself, when you're sitting there for 30 seconds, hold this place of, it's all okay. 30 seconds, all okay. Doesn't matter. Everything's okay. Painful, whatever it is, 30 seconds. When my 30 seconds was up, I'm watching TV. I'm done. I'm going. I'm doing whatever I want to do. I'm snapping at somebody. I'm doing whatever. Whatever I intend to do, that's what I'm going to do. But I did not realize that wedging that little sati in that reactivity gradually over time grew that window for me to be able to be very still in the midst of a lot of reactivity. But I didn't know. We can't see that until we start putting a wedge in there of patience, this pausing for however short. So that's what I would encourage you to do, is to just put the little, don't judge your behavior and how you're doing it. And I'm not doing good and it never works. I've already been there. I've done it for you. You don't have to do it. Put your little wedge in there. That's it. And gradually over time, sati, which is what you're actually inserting, is mindfulness. That sati will grow on its own. And you will begin to see it.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. It pays to have a Dhamma teacher that was very reactive so that you can, because you all look at me and people say to me all the time, you're so still, you're so patient. I wish I could be like you. And I'm like, yeah, you don't know from whence I come. And that's what we're really talking about here, is learning how to trust that this is not the self-help training. This is the learning to see subtle wisdom, and it comes from difficulty. So we have to begin to get into a mode where we actually appreciate and enjoy and laugh at our difficulties, because that difficulty is actually going to be our saving grace. If we don't have any comments, there was one other reflection, and I couldn't choose which one to share. So I'm going to share this one that I wanted to share. So we'll just share this and then we'll close it out for the evening. Does anyone in the room have a comment? We're good? Oh, go ahead. Let me get the mic for you.
It's okay.
Yeah, technology. See, right down front, the machine. Oh wait, is it on? It's on. But it's not. Wait. Hold on.
I can yell.
Okay. It doesn't work if it's not on. I think it's on.
I was just thinking about like duality with this as well, and like how technology was like created by humans, but also I definitely reflect on like the Industrial Revolution, and I just think that like the people who work the like quick attention span jobs are usually people who have been like marginalized. And I think there's a tier in that work structure. Yeah. And I really resonate with what you're saying.
Yes. What you are pointing to is, for those of us that are older, I can remember this. I can remember when I was a young girl, my mother made bread every weekend. And I wanted Wonder Bread so bad. And our sandwiches were made out of homemade bread. I can't believe it. I never even bothered to learn how to make the bread, because now I wish I could have the homemade bread. But back then, it was like, I wanted Wonder Bread. I've tasted Wonder Bread. It's god awful. Oh my God, I couldn't wait to taste it. And then when I got a slice of it, I was like, are you kidding me? What happened was that it's actually a weird thing that you're talking about, because when I was young, I don't know how many of you lived in this kind of a family, but the boys did work like doing the yard and taking out the trash. But the girls, I mean, our work was never ending. Domestic duties was constant, the cooking, the cleaning, the washing the dishes. We did so much work. And when I was young, we didn't have any automation kinds of things. So washing the dishes was washing the dishes. And washing clothes was like a machine that you had to mix all the clothes up, and then you had to roll them through rolling pins and to get them on the other side. But it was no automation. Everything was manual. And even cooking was from scratch, from everything. And it would take, from the moment you got home from work, all night it would take, and my mother would rush and rush and rush and rush and rush and rush till we got all the cooking done. But now, it's so quick. It's so easy. You don't even have to think about all these things. And so that automation, which began to come into our lives, was actually a gift to help, like the early days of Industrial Revolution was like this gift to get people out of all that hard labor on agricultural farms, and you can come into these industries and do these very simple tasks that's so easy. And yet, I don't think we realized how that easiness, I don't think we realized how it was going to affect us. I don't even think we recognized how sitcoms turned our lives into 30-minute, everything worked out great. No matter how bad it got, everything worked out great. Everything's going to be good. 1 hour, everything's going to be good. It would start out okay, and then it would get bad, 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 and then everything would work out good. So when we think of endings, we think it always should be the nice resolve. The ending should be good. Everybody should be happy. Nobody's problem. You can have some murder mystery, but they never talk about all the drama and trauma that happens after the murder to the whole family that's left behind. Never. Everything happy. Family gets back together. They find the missing kid. Everything's happy. And yet, in real life, there is this constant resolve. But it's not always this happy ending. And we somehow forget that sometimes it resolves in a happy ending, sometimes it resolves in an unhappy ending. But it does resolve. But we don't have this sense of the duration of the resolve, or how does it resolve, and what happens. And so we're kind of like trapped in this never-ending commercial sitcom energy. And somehow, Dhamma, I'm hoping it interrupts that. We can begin to see that, and we can interrupt that way of living. So I like what you're saying there. There is something that starts out as it's going to, like, protect us, make our lives easier. Because for women, or for the marginalized, we were in the fields. Women were doing all the housework, and then all of a sudden this automation comes that's supposed to help us, and it ends up being the curse that we live with today. So anyway, I thought we were going to go early, but it's pretty typical for me to be at the last minute. So thank you all for being here. I appreciate you. I hope we begin to practice with this patience throughout the whole month. There's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. I want you just to consider, if you go to the website and you look at that patience, the little teaching themes, just take a look at the write-ups and read a little bit and think to yourself, what do you think it is? Let the answers come to you as to what patience is. And gradually, as you come to the weeks and talks and listen to the talks, just see for your own self how you feel about patience. Let that be your guide. And you can trust that. All right? Okay. Well, it's 9 o'clock. It's time to go home. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you. Thank you for being online, for being here. We'll see you next week. Bye.